You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hello, I'm Kendra Winchester, here with Autumn Privet, and this is the Reading Women podcast, where we're reclaiming half the bookshelf by discussing books written by or about women. And this is episode 34, where we're talking about our nonfiction shortlist for the Reading Women Award.
Woohoo!
I'm so excited for this shortlist, because I feel like it's a surprise.
I do too. Like, this was a weird year for nonfiction, and I don't know if it's like there was just so many good fiction books that nonfiction didn't get as much limelight. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, from my personal anecdotal experience, I found like a lot more dudes are in nonfiction and not as many women for whatever reason. And I don't know why that is. Mm. Like, I know that's just a very scientific way of saying it. But
well, you know, I guess this might be a good chance to like throw in a, hey, if anyone has any good nonfiction they read this year, send it our way. Whatever.
Yeah, we did a lot of research this year and for it. And I feel like we just, like, all the fiction books we had a hard time choosing. And this one, instead, we were more like researching the crap out of all the things and trying to find books that we both really enjoyed and ones that fit our mission. And yeah, so this year we were looking all around for different nonfiction books and ones that we both really enjoyed, but also a wide range of nonfiction books, because we found, say, there are a lot of memoirs, but we wanted to include some like sciencey stuff, mm-hmm. and you know, just a wide range of a different thing, because I don't want to give any spoilers away.
Shall we get to it?
Yeah, so I guess I have the first one, and this is The Fact of a Body by Alexandria Marzano Lesnovich, and this is out from Flatiron Books. And this book, it's just something else. I don't know what the saying goes, but the man. Okay, so this book is a bit hard to describe because it's a twist of memoir and true crime. So we follow Alexandria. She is in law school, and so she goes down to the South, Louisiana, to intern with this nonprofit that tries to get people off death row. And so she meets this guy who is a pedophile, and she interviews him, and she realizes when she interviews him that she actually is repulsed by him, and she actually wants him to be on death row. And so when her feelings and her like belief system collide, that really threw her for a loop. And so that really changed really the course of her life. She eventually went and did a creative writing degree, and that's where she is now. So she wanted to talk about why that is. I don't want to mention exactly why those two really meant a lot for her, but part of this is her childhood. So what she does is like her background and where she came from, her family, her parents are both lawyers. She had this almost idyllic childhood, but her parents and had some secrets, and so that went into that. So she parallels the guy in prison's life and experience and her own, and just blends those together really well.
Yeah, and one thing I thought that was really cool about this book is I've never read anything like it, that's for sure. It reads almost like Little Deaths in the sense that it's like a thriller kind of story, but then like also it's her life too, which is really fascinating. And she does it so effortlessly, it seems like, the way she weaves in and out between the two narratives and like draws conclusions and holds your interest. And I don't know, I was on the edge of my seat, which you don't really say often for a memoir.
Yeah, definitely not one of those. And I read it in like two sittings. And I will say that there are a lot of trigger warnings in this book, because obviously she's dealing with the story of a pedophile, Ricky Langley, and his experience and different things. So just be aware going into that this book can be really hard to read.
Yes.
But she does an amazing thing with time, is one of the things. Mm-hmm. I was talking about this with someone on Twitter, and she was just saying, like, the way that she deals with time, and she moves back and forth in time, and she goes through Ricky's history, and then, you know, her own history, and just different things. Amazing. And I really did enjoy that. Like, the skill that she used with that.
Yeah, she's a really good writer, and she really did her research too. Like, it's very well documented in the back, like where she got her facts and how and if she changed them and all those things too. So it was, I was surprised at how much I liked it, quite honestly, because I wasn't sure.
This book is something that I heard a bit about when it first came out, but since it came out, I haven't heard a lot about it. So I'm very excited to talk about it. It's hard to really talk about this book without going into spoilers, guys. You just have to trust us.
Yeah, I would just say that, like, you'll probably like, without revealing any spoilers, if you like true crime books, then you'll like this book.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably like the best I can recommend it.
Yeah, and don't read blurbs on the internet, because most of them spoil it, which is really irritating. And I read it a little before it came out, so I didn't have any of those spoilers, and it really had a more powerful impact on me. And so I think it's very important not to read too many blurbs about it, or else you'll find out some details.
And that is all.
Yes. So we're very excited to announce the first book on our shortlist is The Fact of a Body by Alexandria Mazzano-Lesnovich, and that is out from Flatiron.
So then my first pick is Reading with Patrick by Michelle Kuo, and this book is published by Random House. And I saw this book earlier this spring on some email I got from someone, and I didn't really hear anything about it after that, but I read the blurb, and the blurb was about, it said something about like an English teacher in the rural South. And I was like, oh, well, that sounds like something I would be interested in. But I didn't really hear anything about it. And then when we were choosing nonfiction books, I was like, oh yeah, there's a book that I wanted to read. So I got it. This is just like a really amazing book. It is a memoir. And Michelle she had recently graduated from Harvard, and she decided that she was going to sign up for a semester with Teach for America. And she ended up teaching in a really small town just south of a couple hours south of the Tennessee border in Helena, Arkansas. It's like, and then from there, like, it's not what you think it would be. Yeah. So Michelle's parents are immigrants from Taiwan. So her being a first generation American, she has some really interesting perspectives on race and on immigration and on just the South in general, and just a lot of like, just a really unique perspective. And so one of her students is Patrick, and like, she starts out like, you know, right out of school, like with these like very idealistic, like with this very idealistic perspective about what this teaching experience is going to be like. And she kind of realizes that really quickly that it's not what she thought it was going to be, for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, I really appreciated the perspective that she has on the teaching experience. And one of the things that she does really well is she comments on her like past self, and she's like, I had all these ideals. Wasn't I so stupid? Only she says it much better than that. And she says, I had this idea of what, she has a mostly African-American classroom. She says, I had an idea of what my mostly Black students would need to learn. And I had all of these goals, and that I was going to talk to them about all these things. And it's not actually received very well. And she quickly discovers she needs to take a different tact. And instead of like, we're used to the teachery feel-good stories on like the Hallmark Channel, where this teacher makes a huge difference in these student lives. But this book takes a totally different turn in how it approaches that kind of topic. And I really appreciate her perspective as an Asian American in like the Mississippi Delta-ish region teaching African American students. It's just a really just well-written, like, her perspective on the world and her observations are just amazing.
One thing she does too that I thought was cool is that she spends a lot of time situating herself and situating her students and situating her region in the historical context. I was really actually surprised at how long the endnotes were, and how much research she did and how much reading she did to just kind of inform her readers about the political and social and all different kinds of factors that contributed to what she was seeing and what she was experiencing, which I thought was really helpful.
Yeah, she does an amazing job with that. And she has a lot of history of racism against Asian Americans in that area, which I knew obviously nothing about. And she talks about how there's a lack of awareness about different, ways that Asian Americans experience racism. And she does some brilliant parallels with that, not just with Asian Americans or African Americans, but with a bunch of, different minorities groups. And I felt like, and she did her, such a great job of portraying that, but also she is very aware that this is her memoir and this is her experience. And I don't believe that she has the mistake that a lot of memoirs do, making these universal conclusions from her personal anecdote experience. She just says, this is my experience, this is what I observed, and this is what I learned from it. And I thought she just did a great job with that.
And I think I'll just wrap it up a little bit by saying this, that as we mentioned, she's very self-aware. And I'm going to read this one quote that I took a screenshot of because I thought it really, really perfectly encapsulated the tone of the book. And so at one point she's reading poetry with Patrick, and she had this practice of always asking him what his favorite line was. There's this Keats poem that they're reading, and she says that she says, "I was surprised. When she asked him, and he tells her which line was his favorite, she says, "I was surprised. I realized I had expected he would choose, but I, being poor, have only my dreams. How stupid. Which line he loved, what moved him, I couldn't know." And I think that was just such a true statement that we all come into these kinds of situations with biases, and often they're wrong. And often, especially when education and reading is talked about, it's talking about the silver bullet to solve all problems. And while I do think that reading does change people, it's not magic. I don't know. It doesn't solve all problems. There are other things at play, and there are social factors and things at play. So it was just really good. I saw a New York Times article about this book a month ago, but other than that, I've not seen anyone talking about this book. And I'm no, this is so sad. Cause this is such a great book. So
it is, especially for anyone who is a teacher or, is into English education or anything like that. Basically this is for you. This is perfect.
Very, yeah. Very, very good. So that is Reading with Patrick by Michelle Kuo.
And the next one on our short list is Inferior by Angela Saini, and this is out from Beacon Press. And this book is about the history of the study of women as a science. And so I have been really interested in pop science books recently in the last few years, and I had never seen one on this. And what Angela does is she kind of goes through the history of scientific studies that have been studying women and the difference in gender. And so she starts with really early on with how this one woman wrote Darwin, and Darwin was basically no, women have evolved to be inferior. And the woman writing him was no, that's not correct. And it basically goes from there, and the biases that a lot of male scientists have brought to the table when studying gender, and that, well, they come to the table believing that women are inferior. And so it talks about the biases in their studies, and it comes all the way up to the present with current studies of gender. It was just really great. I really, really loved it.
Yeah, when we finished this book, I think, Kendra, you described it best as the science version of All the Single Ladies.
Yeah. That is basically it.
It's not as long as that. I will say that. It's not as long.
It's 230 pages?
Something like that.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like she did a great job of giving you an overview of what science was out there rather than this deep, really in-depth study. So people like me who aren't scientists and aren't science people can understand it and enjoy it, but then aren't overwhelmed by all of these sciencey terms, which I only vaguely understand.
Yeah. No, I thought that there were so many great things about this. And even when she was talking about the biases, and when she was talking about how there just aren't as many studies done that include women as include men. And it was, this book, like, there's certain things that, like, might make you, like, really mad that, like, things, these kinds of things actually happen. Like, she's talking about, like, how autoimmune diseases aren't studied as much historically because historically women have more autoimmune diseases than men. And so it's, like, all these different diseases that, like, don't get studied because, like, mostly women have them and, like, all this stuff. And I was like, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, as everyone could understand, I was so mad when I read that. I had to stop. I had to stop the audiobook.
Yeah.
Because I was so mad.
I was mad, too.
And there's another one where she talks about how when they do drug trials, they mostly use men because they're worried about, like, women possibly being pregnant and then, like, getting sued and stuff. And so there was, it was, like, a sleep aid, and they found that women were more susceptible because they had, like, this standard dose. And they were like, oh, women are more sensitive, blah, blah, blah. So they changed the dose. But then they were like, oh, wait, it's because the average woman weighs less than the average man. So it's weight, not gender. And there was, like, this entire horrible, like, sequence of events to figure that out. And it just shows the biases that science has, and how she also talks in the beginning about how there aren't a lot of women in science, so obviously that means that women's perspective aren't in studies and different things, which is really fascinating.
Yeah, it made me want to, like, do some more research, because, like we said, it's not super in-depth, which I think is good, because I think a book like this could really easily become overwhelming if you went too deep into the science of it.
Yeah, I think she struck a great balance there. I was just appalled and overwhelmed and blown away by the different types of research that is out there and, like, the process of a scientific theory becoming a fact was also interesting, and how, like, studies had to be replicated and how that worked and how that looked over the course of history and with women involved and everything. And anyway, I'm going to stop gushing so you can go out and find your own copy of Inferior by Angela Saini.
Which that brings us to our sponsor for this episode. And we are so excited to have the Literary Emporium as our sponsor for this episode. And you've probably seen their stuff on the internet somewhere, because I first found out about it through, like, different bookstagrammers and stuff. And so we're so thrilled to have them as our sponsor. And I think I first saw these t-shirts that she makes that have, like, they have a Jane Eyre t-shirt that with this, like, really pretty silhouette, and it says, "I am no bird."
Yeah, that's a really good one. And they have amazing enamel pins, which I am just coveting. Oh my goodness. There is a, there's one from Frankenstein that says, "Beware, for I am fearless and therefore powerful."
Yes, I want the sweatshirt so badly. That might be my Christmas present to myself.
We all need Christmas presents to ourselves.
Yes, absolutely. And she just released two new pins that are dystopian pins. So there's, like, one from a quote from the very famous quote from The Handmaid's Tale, which I will butcher the pronunciation if I try to say it, so I'm not even going to try. But she has, like, beautiful earring, like, all kinds of stuff. Like, what would you say, Kendra, is your favorite thing from her website?
My favorite thing from her website, besides the enamel pins, which I've already mentioned, would probably be, I don't know, she has these Harry Potter notebooks that are, like, they look all vintagey and, like, worn, so you could find them in Hogwarts somewhere, like, in a dungeon somewhere, and you could pull them out, and they have, like, different features on them. So one is, like, the Book of Potions, one's the Advanced Spell, so you could, like, have them for your own Hogwarts experience. I might have to get them for Dylan when he goes to Hogwarts as an exchange student. You know, they also have postcards and prints, which I'm all for having bookish prints in my house. And there's one of the original illustration of Alice in Wonderland when she's talking to the Cheshire Cat, which is one of my favorite literary cats ever. I could probably just spend all my money on this website and be perfectly happy. Though Dylan will be upset because I spent all his treat money, but
well,
you know.
I'm sure he'd get over it eventually.
Maybe.
Maybe not.
He'd chew my books as a punishment or retribution.
Another thing we forgot to mention that I wanted to just note is that she also has different collections on her website. So she has, like, an Alice in Wonderland collection, or a Bronte collection, a feminist collection, a gothic literature collection, Jane Austen, Harry Potter inspired, and a Virginia Woolf section too. So, like, if you have a favorite, I know. So if you have, like, a favorite author or something, you can go and, like, see everything in one place, and yeah, it's cool. So we're really excited to have her as our sponsor, and they have graciously given us a promo code for the Reading Women. So you can use the promo code ReadingWomen15 to get 15% off your purchase. And this is a great time. Like, I'm sure a lot of you might be starting your Christmas shopping already. So, like, definitely hop on this. I'm definitely going to be getting some Christmas presents. And we will have a link to her website in our show notes. So go check it out. Beautiful stuff. You won't be disappointed. So then the next book on our list is Tell Me Everything You Don't Remember by Christine Hyung Ok Lee. And if you remember, we interviewed Christine earlier this year, and we were delighted to talk to her. And she has a really incredible story. What happened was is she woke up one morning with a headache, and by that afternoon, like, everything was upside down. Like the upside down. I'm just making that connection as I'm talking. That was a little Stranger Things Easter egg for you all. Moving on. So that was on December 31st, and by New Year's Day, she was like completely like couldn't put sentences together, was like completely like disoriented, and come to find out she'd had a stroke, and she was only what, like 30, something like that?
Yeah, she was around 30s, really young, obviously, for a stroke.
Very young. So this memoir follows her recovery process and kind of like how she reorients her life afterwards. And the interesting thing is, like, there's a theme that runs through it. She uses a quote and passages from Slaughterhouse-Five, but there's a quote in Slaughterhouse-Five where Josh is going to kill me, but I can't remember his name. But one of the characters says that he is unstuck in time. And so she uses that phrase as a way to like talk about how she was like completely unmoored from time and unmoored from herself. And like, because she was like operating outside of time, like the struggles that she had to work through with that. It was just really an incredible story.
It is. It's a very amazing story. And I loved how she talked about how writing helped her remember things, because she said she would put like a pot on the stove to boil and she would forget it was there. And she'd turn around and be like, oh, why is this there? And she would write stuff down to herself, like Dear Christine in the future, basically. Like, she would write down the stuff happening, and writing helped her actually come out and recover from it. But also, she also talks about how even though she is recovered from her stroke, that she still has, you know, has to be careful, because she's basically still living with a chronic illness. She's living with this thing that she's recovered from. And I mean, I don't think you ever can 100% bounce back from something like that. So I really appreciated her take on a chronic illness and recovering from that kind of thing, because I don't think we have a lot of stories about people dealing with long-term chronic illnesses, especially ones this rare.
Right. And especially being so young. And she kind of talks too about how difficult it was to be so young and to be working through this recovery process. So she just kind of talks about the process of recovery. And I don't know. Like I said, we interviewed her earlier this year. So if you want to like kind of hear her take on it, definitely go back. We'll and listen to that. And yeah.
Yeah. It is really good. And she also talks about what it's like to have, like, for the caretakers of someone who's struggling with something like that. Because, I mean, she was out of work for a long time and she couldn't remember things, and she was basically reverted back to a childlike state. So she felt like she was, like, rebirthed in a lot of ways, and she had to develop in it. There's just so much going on. So, I'll just stop. I mean, I'm just going to gush about every single one on this list, guys. So I think you guys are used to it by now.
So that was Tell Me Everything You Don't Remember by Christine Hyung Ok Lee.
And the next one is actually a graphic memoir, and that is The Best We Could Do by T. Bui. And that is out from Abrams. And this is just an amazing memoir about T's life, but actually, I guess, more about her parents' life. She is Vietnamese American, and so her parents immigrated from Vietnam right after the war ended. And so she actually goes back in time and goes to her parents' childhoods and what it was like before the war, during the war, and after the war, and what it was like to immigrate to America. And I thought she did such a great, great job with this memoir.
And can we just say that it's beautiful?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. She uses these amazing, like, watercolors throughout the entire thing. And whenever she uses more color than she usually does, you can tell it means something. Like, she's communicating meaning with her color choice.
I haven't read many graphic novels in general for a graphic memoir, too. Like, I don't really know what I was expecting, but, like, man, it was like really emotional to read, and something about like she recreated sketches of like her parents and her siblings, like photos that were in like their immigration papers, and like recreated her neighborhood and like the child she grew up, or the her childhood home and all these things. And it's just like, oh man, something about like seeing it, like you just can't ignore it.
She does such a great job of communicating cultural difference. Vietnamese culture, if you think about from a traditional like American Western culture, is so different, especially the family dynamic and how that works in their just what is cultural norms there. And she just did a great job of communicating that in such a clear way, and I just love that. And she also communicates a very difficult topic, which is the Vietnam War, incredibly well. She doesn't let either side off the hook, and she really, I think, gives a very balanced view, especially considering that when we hear about the Vietnam War as Americans, we usually hear about it from the like white American military perspective. And she is talking about the war from an actual Vietnamese family's perspective, which I think we definitely need more stories like that.
Yeah. And like it's, she too talks in the story about like the difficulty she had in actually telling her story, and how she tried a couple times to do it and like couldn't do it. And I don't know, it's just beautiful.
Yeah. It is. And every new chapter and section, I was just overwhelmed with how well she handled difficult topics in a way that was relatable and universal and understandable, and just how she did that through a graphic like medium, like how she did through a visual medium as well with her words. And I don't think I've liked a graphic memoir as well as this one since I read Fun Home. There we go. Mm. So yeah, it's just really a moving memoir, and I haven't really seen it that many places either, and I just think more people should be talking about it.
It's really good. I'd expected to like spend a couple days reading it, and I think I read it in like two sittings, something like that.
Yeah, it is. I don't know, like her storytelling is really good, the pacing is really good, and the forward momentum is really good, and she jumps back and forth in time to kind of like to have present her reflect on past parents' stories, and then how her parents are like now, and how that's explained by what they went through and their history and different things. And everything about it is just so informative, and it's just a really good story. So that is The Best We Could Do by T. Bowie. That's out from Abrams.
And then the last book on our list, last but not least, is Hunger, A Memoir of My Body by Roxane Gay. And this book is published by Harper. And, okay, so, moment of truth, this is the first Roxane Gay book I've ever read.
What a one to start on, Autumn.
I know. Kendra's been saying forever that I need to read Roxane Gay, and I just hadn't because, I don't know, I don't have a good reason, quite honestly. Hunger is her, obviously, like, her memoir, and she talks about, basically, her relationship with, well, I mean, it's a, oh, man, like, it's, you can't really encapsulate it. The title comes from her describing her relationship with food, but then also, like, it's also, like, on a different level, like, a hunger she had for lots and lots and lots of different things. I will say that this memoir does have quite a few things that could be triggering for people. She talks about sexual assault, and she talks about, I will say before I go any further that there are some triggering things in here that happened to her, like sexual assault that happened to her when she was in middle school, and then like gang rape too. So like if that's something you're sensitive to, just be aware of that going into it. But like it's a really pivotal part of her story. And so she shows how that's really affected a lot of the things that have happened in her life. And I like, the thing is like, she just writes with such a grace, you know, like that's the thing I think I came away with from reading this book is like, she's had a lot of really tragic things happen in her life. And, but the way she talks about them is just really, I don't know. Like, the only word I can think of is, like, she just writes with such grace. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah. And the way that she expresses herself and the way that she talks about weight and her struggle with weight, that it's not just a weight issue, that this stems from what happened to her. And so it's not just something, it's not just the physical aspect of it. It's also the psychological aspect of it and just dealing with that. And then also, like, how her family dealt with that and how the things that she wished she could have done and just a lot of different things about her life that, you know, she just talks about in a frank way, but she's also very gracious towards other people in her story. And I don't know, just the way she expresses herself is also very humorous. Mm-hmm. So she's able to lighten up the book as well when, you know, need be. And she just writes so beautifully, like on a sentence level as well.
Yeah, it does have a really good rhythm to it because it could be a very, very dark book. And it is in a lot of ways. But like Kendra said, like she... It has a very good rhythm. So like you can read it and like there's moments of lightness and, you know, mixed in within these like heavier, darker moments. So it's, yeah, I was just blown away.
Yeah. And I, when I really like a book, I underline and add sticky notes. And so I used a pink, like a bright pink pen for this one. So I thought Roxanne would like that. So I just have so many notes from this book and underlined so many things, and just the structure of it is really well done, and the different parts and the different focuses that she does, and just the whole thing is just really well thought out. And so I'm glad she took the extra like 6 months or whatever it was to edit the draft of this book and then to the final version, because it is definitely well worth the wait.
And I think, too, like, it was helpful for me. I read this one, and then I read Difficult Women, and I felt like it helped me kind of understand her writing a little bit better, knowing about her experiences and kind of, like, her journey to becoming a writer, because she also talked about that in her book about, like, how she kind of came to write and all that, too. So highly, highly recommend, obviously.
Yeah, and this is one, we all know how Autumn talks about how she met Jesmyn Ward that one time. Well, I can say, well, I met Roxane Gay that one time.
This is true.
And she was lovely. And she talked about Ina Garten and Channing Tatum.
Obviously.
Because what else would Roxane Gay talk about?
Well, she's obviously going to include Ina Garten and Channing Tatum, so I expect nothing less.
It's because she's amazing.
Yes, so definitely go and get a copy of Hunger, A Memoir of My Body by Roxane Gay.
And that's it. That's a short list.
I can't believe it. Oh, my goodness. It always goes so fast.
It does. It really does. So I'm really excited about all of these books. So stay tuned. We have some Q&As planned with our shortlist authors for you to check out. So keep an eye on our website and on our newsletter so you can read those, because, yeah, we've been really excited about all of these authors and their works.
So that is our show. Be sure to join us on December the 6th, where we will be announcing the winners, the nonfiction and the fiction winners for the Reading Women Award for 2017. And we'd also like to say a special thank you to our sponsor for this episode, Literary Emporium. And we will have links to the promo code and to the website in our show notes, so be sure to check that out. And as always, you can find me, Autumn Privet, on Twitter and Instagram, etc., at Autumn Privet. And you can find Kendra Winchester at KD Winchester. And thank you again for listening to the Reading Women podcast. And if you haven't reviewed us wherever you listen to this podcast, if you could drop us a review, that'd be great. It really helps more people find our podcast. We will talk to you all next time.
Bye, guys.